Okay, thank you, Bernd. So first of all, I'd like to thank the organizer for the invitation. And well, I'm very happy to be here, and I wish Jean-Pierre a very happy birthday. And so this talk is also a birthday. 10 years ago, it was a workshop at Oxford in 1999, and it was part of FOCM. It was at a workshop organized by Jean-Pierre and Pascal Coirant that I presented for the first time an efficient algorithm for polynomial system solving. And this is what I'm going to explain now in three lectures. So the first lecture will give you a general idea of what the algorithm here. But before, I'd like to start with the generalities. So we'll be interested during all the talk to solve this kind of polynomial system. So the equations are S. And there's an inequation, which is not so usual, but this is very necessary in practice to be able to handle such inequations. And so there's a lot of motivation to have very good software for polynomial system solving. So of course they are necessary for all operations arising in computational algebraic geometry or even in differential algebra. And so we at the present time, there exist many softwares which are really very efficient to handle a practical problem for the industry. But, because there's a but, we don't know quasi-optimal algorithms for the general case. So this is still a very active research. And there are many, many methods which are either symbolic or numeric. And one very difficult point is that in practice you are given a polynomial system and you are wondering which is the best method to use. And at the present time there's no answer to this question. So it's something I think there should be a lot of effort to do in that direction. For instance, if you think of just multiplying two polynomials. There are three kinds of algorithms. The naive algorithm, Karatsuba, and then algorithm based on the FST. So this is very easy. This is some kind of univariate, of one-dimensional geometry, and you know that on one segment you are going to use the naive algorithm, then Karatsuba, and then for a very big problem you use the fast algorithm. But for polynomial systems, the geometry is much more complicated. I'm not going to present all the non-technique, but I would like to give a certain numbers of algorithms. So there are, so probably the first algorithm, well, very complete algorithm is due to Kronecker, Leopold Kronecker. From the algorithmic point of view, the things, started really in the 60s in two different kinds of work. First, the desingularization work by Hironaka. He was using standard basis. And there are the Grubner basis, which are more popular in the computer algebra community, and which have been popularized by Boberger. And then many other symbolic techniques have been designed on the basis of older known techniques such as resultants or triangular decomposition and Macaulay matrices. And for instance, the EF4 and F5 algorithm by Fogère are some kind of mixtures of very practical computer science and old mathematical techniques. Then concerning the numerical techniques, they were mainly developed independently of the symbolic techniques until the 90s approximately, but now things are more there's much more interaction between numerical and symbolic point of view, and that led recently to more efficient algorithms, and the algorithm I'm going to present today is takes benefit from some numerical point of view and benefit of some symbolic point of view. So a couple of references. So this is a sample of references. Well, these are the books I use in general. So these two ones mainly concern a Grubner basis and elimination. These two ones are very good books for starting with the subject. And so there's a book by Gatton and Gerhardt for complexity. There is this book, which is not very well known, but I find it very good with example in Macaulay 2. And then for the numerical point of view, there's this book for the practical aspect. And of course, this one for complexity analysis, conditioning number. And if you want to train your French, there's also this book from Jean-Pierre, which is actually very good. Well, I like it. Okay. So before describing the Kronecker solver, I would like to discuss the different kind of representation for multivariate polynomials. Because indeed, this is a major question. According to the representation, you will get different complexities for the algorithms. So there is the dense representation that is used in general in Grubner basis. So you store all the monomials up to a certain degree, and so you build a big vector, but this vector may contain several zeros. So if you want to avoid that, you can use a sparse representation. So this is the same polynomial in both cases. And in the sparse representation, you only store the monomials with non-zero coefficients. But you can use a functional representation. So this is a representation of not of the polynomial seen as a vector in certain vector space, but the polynomial seen as a function. And so you store, for instance, a graph with the leaves being the constants or the variables, and the nodes being the arithmetic operations. So this can be implemented with a directed acyclic graph. And you can see, so the polynomial we've just seen before is the expansion of this polynomial. So with the functional representation, you can take advantages of the good evaluation property of the input system, which often appear in practice if you think of equation coming from chemistry or robotics and things like this. You always have compact equations, and if you expand them, they can just the input problem can become very big. Okay. And so according to these representations, you can have different complexities for a given problem. For instance, suppose you want to solve a linear system which is made of symbolic coefficients. Well, this seems to be relatively absurd, but in fact, in practice, well, many people want to do this in much more complicated setting, of course, but the problem arises very quickly. So if you want to solve this problem, you will have to compute the determinant of the matrix. And if you use the dense or sparse representation, the number of the monomial is going to be exponential in the size of the problem. But with a functional representation, you could use Berkowitz algorithm to keep the size of the output, to compute something in polynomial time with an output that has also polynomial size. And so a similar problem is a resultant. So suppose that you want to decide if two univariate polynomials with symbolic coefficients share a common root. And so if you compute the resultant with dense representation, again, you will get a number of monomials that is going to grow exponentially. And if you compute the determinant of the Sylvester matrix with Berkowitz, then you can do that computation in polynomial time. Okay, a more complicated example is now a polynomial system with random coefficients and in 2n variables, so twice variables as equations. So it's going to be informal, but if you do elimination with that system, so you want to eliminate half of the variables. So your eliminant polynomial are going to have n variables, and their degree is going to be the Bézout number, d to the n. So the number of the monomials of your eliminant polynomial is going to grow with b to n square when n goes to infinity. And one of the goals of this talk is to is to convince you that you can use the functional representation to do it just in time polynomial in d to the n, in the Bézout number. So if you store eliminant polynomial with a functional representation, you gain an order of magnitude in all the complexities. So the problem of the representation is very central to that question of solving polynomial systems. Okay, so some very elementary definitions, just to make sure that there's no ambiguity in the notations. So during all the talk, K is going to be the coefficient field of the system. So it's going to be of characteristic zero or sufficiently large. And so this is the polynomial ring, and I is going to be an ideal. So I recall the definition of an affine variety. So this is the common root of the polynomial of an ideal. And so there's a duality between operation on ideals and operation on variety. And so I recall that Zariski topology is a topology with closed set being the affine varieties. And the vanishing ideal of some set. So here is written I of the set, and it's the set of polynomials that are zero on the given set of point E here. And we shall need the null Stellensatz. So I recall this formula briefly. So the ideal of the variety of an ideal is a radical of the original ideal. Okay, so one operation that you might be a little less familiar with is the saturation of an ideal. So this is the formula. This is some kind of a division. And the main property we will use is the following, that this algebraic operation corresponds to removing some part of a variety. So this saturation operation is, geometrically speaking, is a set minus operator. So on very simple example, you can see, well, you can do this computation by hand. So in this ideal, you have removed this line defined by x1 by this saturation. And okay, here we are with the Kronecker solver. So I carry on with the same notations. And what I will need is that three families of ideals. So the solver is going to be incremental in the number of equations to be solved. So I introduce this first, this ideal II, which is made only on the highest first equation of the problem you want to solve. And this ideal is the highest intermediate ideal where you add the first variables and the sum of the number of the variables with the number of equations equals n. And there this is similar, but the number of equations and the number of variables equals n minus 1. So for this talk, I will write with this, I will work with this assumption. So I assume that the system has as many equations as unknowns, and that the sequence is regular, which means that fi plus 1 is a non-zero divisor modulo the preceding ideal. So this corresponds exactly to this definition. And I also assume that all the intermediate systems have only a simple solution. So algebraically, I assume that all these II are radical. So it's going to be shown in the second lecture, but for the purpose of the presentation, we will admit from now that the dimension of this ideal is exactly n minus 1. and that implies for I equals n that the system admits only a finite number of solutions. Okay, so the main idea is the following. So we are going to build a deformation to go from this solution to this solution. And so this is a finite set of points with when the coordinates are sufficiently generic. So at the beginning of the algorithm, we apply a random affine change of the coordinates, and then we can assume that these ji have dimension zero. So they're made of the Eierstrass equation and then the n-1 variable specialized to zero. And so from ji to ji plus 1, what changes is that we add one more equation. So we add fi plus 1, and we remove this last linear equation. So this is the only difference. We add one more equation, and we remove one specialization. And to do that, we are going to follow the curve defined by these equations. So this corresponds to this finite set of points where this specialization of this variable x n minus y has been discarded. Okay, so now a few words on the representation of this set of this solution set. So for a finite solution set, we are going to use this kind of representation. So the roots are going to be parametrized by the roots of a univariate polynomial. So here the solution set is parametrized by, so the coordinates are parametrized by polynomials v1 up to vn, and q is going to be a polynomial as well. And so the data of sufficiently generic coordinates, so I will make it more formal in the next talk. But for the terminology, I will call a lifting fiber the data of sufficiently generic coordinates and such a representation for the ideal Ji. And well, this is also called witness set in the works by Sommeser and his collaborators. So for curves, the situation is similar, but the parametrization is in term of a bivariate polynomial, of the curve defined by a bivariate polynomial. Here, this is Q again, and take care of the derivative is taken by the with respect to the second variable. But we can parametrize any algebraic curve by this kind of equations. And there's a very important point. This is that the degree so we can control the total degree of this polynomial. And the total degree of these polynomials Q and the Wi is bounded by the degree in the second variable of the polynomial Q. So and in the second talk, I will also give I will sketch the proof of that fact. But this is very important for complexity. And again, as for lifting fiber, I will say that the data of sufficiently generic coordinates and such a representation for the curve Ki is a lifting curve for the intermediate problem II. Okay, so here is the algorithm. So we start with a random affine change of the coordinates. So I repeat again that this makes all these ideal Ji to have dimension zero. And So at the very beginning, we've got a lifting fiber for the whole space. And this is just a point, so the origin. And then what we do is that we move from the solution set of Ji to the solution set of Ji plus 1. So the goal is to add the new equation Fi plus 1. So there are three, so this divides into three subroutines. The first one is called the lifting step. So from this finite set of point Ji, we compute a representation of that curve Ki. And then we intersect that curve with the next equation Fi plus 1. So we get a new finite set of points under the hypothesis, the regular sequence hypothesis. And then we remove from that set of points the points that are in the hypersurface defined by G. So this is called the cleaning step. And at the end, we've got the solution set of Jn, and we change back the variables to get the solution of the original problem. Okay, so we can see what happens for the first step when there are no inequations. So the first lifting curve is just this line. And when we cut this line with the first equation, the first lifting fiber are the solutions of this equation. What I could have done is that. Yes. Okay, so this is the first lifting fiber. Then we have the new equation. So this is the first lifting curve, which is just the curve solution of this equation. We cut with the second equation F2. So what we get is the common curve to these two equations. What we get is the intersection of the two curves defined by these two equations. And if we add one more equation, so we need to lift, to do one more lifting step, which corresponds to unspecializing xn minus 2. So we get a new curve, and we intersect with S3, and so on. Okay, so let's have some fun with a graphical point of view. Okay, so here are the three equations we want to solve. There's a sphere and a cylinder and a plane. And so this is the first lifting curve, so just the line. So I cut the line with the first equation. So I get 2 points. Okay, you can see the 2 points. And then I unspecialize the variable x2. So I'm going to compute from these 2 points the intersection of the blue plane with the first equation, which is here. So this is the intersection. So now I don't need any more the lifting, the preceding lifting fiber. And then I want to cut this lifting curve with the second hypersurface, which is the cylinder. And the intersection is made of 4 points. Okay, these are the 4 points. And then I compute the next lifting curve, which is here. So I can remove this. So I've got the cylinder with the two lifting fibers. With the two lifting curves, and it just remained to do the last intersection. So I cut these two cycles by the last hypersurface, which is a plane. So it's, we can increase that. And so I get 4 points. Here, and we can check that in this way we have obtained the four intersections of the four solutions of our problems. So this is how the algorithm works. Okay. So yeah, what I should have done. Yes. Okay. Okay. And so this demo was done with has been done with a software called Axel, developed by Bernard Mourin, with other people at Sophia Antipolis in France. And then I want to show you an example, well, real computations. With the MathMagix computer algebra system developed by Van der Hoeven, well, with Van der Hoeven, Bernard Mourin, Olivier Rouata. Yes, and I should have said before, this talk is done with the GNU TechMax software. Okay, that's all for the advertising. TechMax is done by Van der Hoeven. Okay, so there's a package called Kronecker Naive. So you can download that on the internet. At that URL, mathmagix.org. And here is the system we want to solve. So it is very similar to the one we have just displayed in 3D. So the change of the variable is very easy here. I just change x2, so that is going to be sufficient, and this is going to keep the computations as small as possible. And so these are the equations. So I've got three equations, mainly a sphere, something like that, a cylinder, and a plane. So I'm not going to explain what all these scripts means, but I'm going to display the representations of the set. So this is the representation for the first lifting fiber. So these are the point solution of the first equation, with the two first variables being specialized. So we've got these 2 points. And then we apply the lifting routine, and we got a curve that is parametrized in this way. So this is the bivariate polynomial and the value of the variables in terms of the roots of this, in terms of the curve defined by this bivariate polynomial. Then I compute the intersection with the second equation, and this is the second set of solutions. So now I've got four solutions that are parametrized by the roots of this univariate polynomial in this way. And then I call again the lifting routine, and I get the second lifting curve, which has now degree 4. And these are the expressions. So here you can see the denominator is the derivative of this polynomial. And you can see that the bounds on the degrees are satisfied. So this polynomial has degree 4, and the total degrees of all these expressions have degree 4. So the total degrees are always bounded by the number of solutions of the intermediate problems. And then I do the last intersection, and finally here are the solutions of the original problem. So we've got four solutions parametrized by this univariate polynomial. Okay, so here is the way the computations can be done. Okay, so now I'm going to present the complexity results. And I need all these four quantities. So capital L is the cost that you need, well, that it takes to evaluate all the equations on a given point. Then D is a bound on the total degrees of the equation. Oops, Then delta is the maximum number of the points in the lifting fibers. So in our example it was 4, and D is the final number of the solutions. So the result is the following. So this algorithm takes this number of operations. So if we discard the logarithmic factors, we've got a cost which is linear in the evaluation cost of the system. So this is a very important feature of this of the algorithm. So we are polynomial in N. We depend on the square of this quantity delta. And then we have logarithmic factors. And what you see is that the cost for handling the inequation does not very clearly appear. Indeed, it just appears in this L. So the evaluation cost of G is included in L, and even its degree does not appear in the total cost. So the algorithm very naturally handle this inequation. So this is a nice feature as well. And the fact that it depends on a number of solutions is very different from Grubner basis. With Grubner basis, the cost grows with a number of monomials. And this number of monomials is a binomial number, which becomes very quickly bigger and bigger. And this is much more than the number of the solutions. And another nice feature is that we use only dense polynomials in 2 variables. And for that data structure, we have very efficient algorithms. And so the algorithm is probabilistic. So I'm not going to discuss that point very much. But the bad changes of the coordinates are enclosed in some Zariski closed set, and we've got bound on it, and everything is bounded by the Bézout number d to the n. So we have a probability analysis for that, which shows that the probability of success is very high. Okay, and one more point: if we have a system of other rational numbers, which is the most usual situation, then we take a prime number, not so small, not so big. I'm not going to discuss that neither. But in practice, this is 32 bits or 64 bits, not bigger. And then we compute the solution modulo this prime number, and we list the solution over the rationals. So the number of operations modulo p is this one, and then the lifting over the rationals takes this cost. So this is the cost in terms of for bit complexity model. So the cost is again linear in the evaluation cost of the input system. It's linear in the number of the solutions, and it's linear in the bit size of the integers that are going to appear in that univariate representation in the coefficient of the polynomials of the univariate representation of the output. So we can see what this result means for a random system. So for a random system, so consider, for instance, equations of degree 2. So n equations of degree 2 with a small but fixed size coefficient. And so the number of the solutions and the delta is going to be equal to the Bézout number. So it grows with 2 to the n. The bit size of the output also grows with 2 to the n. So we've got n plus 1 polynomials in the output, with each of them has delta as due to the n coefficients, and the bit size of each coefficient is approximately also 2 to the n. So the total size of the output grows with 4 to the n. And with the Kronecker algorithm, the resolution mod p so is in the square of delta, so this is something in 4 to the n. Of course, L is polynomial in n. So it's in this factor. And the lifting is also quasi-linear in 4 to the n. So on such kind of families, the Kronecker solver is really optimal. For a symbolic point of view, of course. Okay. So in the rest of this talk, I'm going to give a brief history of the solver. And then in the second lecture, I'm going to show you why the solver is correct. And it's going to be done very from scratch. So I will do everything on the dimension, for the dimension and for the degree, and I will sketch a proof of the Bézout theorem as well, and everything, all the proofs are, well, not really constructive or algorithmic, but they are in the spirit of the solver by adding equations one by one. And in the third lecture, I will give all the algorithmic details of the solver, and I will explain the cost. So the cost analysis, and so I will show this result for at least for the number of operations in K, not for the bit complexity. And after that, I will explain possible known and possible extension for equidimensional decomposition. So for removing that assumption on the regular sequence, and then the assumption of all the intermediate ideal being radical, and I will also give more references for other extensions. Okay. So explaining the history of the solver is a bit complicated, so I'm not sure if I'm going to be very clear, but this is the idea. So the lifting step, what the lifting step does is that it unspecializes some variables. And this is done with the implicit function theorem that can be implemented with a variant of the Newton operator. But you could say the following thing. Let's say we don't want to use, we could avoid using this this lifting if we don't specialize the variables. So we could store the parametrizations of the intermediate of the intermediate problems with a kind of description of the lifting fibers, but the coefficients not being in K, but being functional, but being multivariate polynomials with a functional representation in terms of that variable that were specialized in the solver. So actually you could do that, and this is the way the Kronecker solver started. But if you do that straightforwardly, so the algorithm reduces to a sequence of resultants, and you don't get a polynomial time complexity in D to the n. You get complexity in D to n square. So after this first idea of using functional representation, the second ingredient was this Newton operator, and in this setting, you can think of the Newton operator or something being able to compress a representation of a variety. So suppose you are given a variety parametrized in this way, with very huge coefficients in the xi, then you specialize this representation at a random point, and you use the Newton, this variant of the Newton operator, to get a new representation. And what is important, and what led to the good complexity, is that this new representation is going to be linear in terms of the time needed to be computed, and in terms of the size needed to store it. It's going to be linear in the evaluation cost, and it's going to be polynomial in the degree of the variety. And the degree variety equals to the degree of that polynomial Q. And so the Newton operator has the ability to compress the data. And this is the way it was the Kronecker solver appeared in the literature. And using such a functional representation for all the intermediate system has many advantages. It's much more closer to the mathematical description, and you can get better control of the probabilities. And there's one more advantages. There exists a non-uniform model in which you can compute with functional representations in polynomial time, and with a deterministic test to zero. So this is for the theory, but for practice, if you use a functional representation, then the use of the functional representation it's not free to do computation with multivariate polynomial in functional representation. You will have many operations when you want to add two polynomials. Well, this looks very stupid. Just you add a node to your graph and things like this, but this is rather expensive, actually. And you have to face a lot of memory management. And if you use polynomials, univariate polynomials over such a data structure, then you will have to use a very complicated algorithm. For instance, for the product, you will have to use the Schoenhage-Strassen algorithm. And you can't directly use the FFT as if you were with polynomials modulo some suitable prime number. So you lose a very big you lose very big constant. Well, the asymptotic costs are the same, but in the big O of the cost estimate, if you use functional representation, then you will have very huge constant. So this makes this approach not very practical. And moreover, this deterministic non-uniform model is not tractable neither, because so if you want to test if two multivariate polynomial with a functional representation are equal, you will have to test that. If you want to make it in a deterministic way, you have to test that on many, many points. But of course, with a probabilistic algorithm, you take one point at random and you're happy with the result. So that makes a lot of difference in terms of timings. So moving from that original version to the one I've just presented, indeed appeal to something which is called deforestation in theoretical computer science. Deforestation is a general paradigm that allows to do automatic transformations in program in order to suppress all the useless construction in the intermediate computations. And this is the way we moved from the original algorithm to the one presented here through this deforestation technique. And so once deforested, what you can see is that the functional representations are only used for the input system. In the intermediate computation, we use univariate polynomials and bivariate polynomials. That's all. Okay, so then a series of paper related to that that story. So the Kronecker solver has well not nothing, but is is much more complicated than the original solver by Kronecker. But I think it's a good homage because the representation for the lifting curve we saw is actually present in Kronecker's work. And Kronecker knew this representation, and it was he generalized. Well, he found that in the work by Koenig in some particular cases. And then the first ideas started in the 90s, and where the functional representation was used to compute the dimensions, the notary position that I'm going to define tomorrow, and to get new better bounds for the null Stellensatz, for an effective version of the null Stellensatz. And then the first non-deforested version of the Kronecker solver appeared in this series of works. So they introduced this way of adding equations one by one. They introduced the symbolic Newton operator, and they showed the polynomial time. So in the first paper, the exponent in terms of the delta here. Whoops, this one. Yeah, so in the first paper, the exponent here was about 16. So there has been many improvements in the works after, but there was a polynomial time. And then there are two major PhD theses that made simplifications and extensions. And I would like to mention works of people who try to implement, well, who implemented functional representation in with the goal of implementing the non-deforested version of the algorithm. And the deforestation paradigm appeared in this work with Gilles-Thi, Aguelet, Marchand, and Salvi. And then the first deforested version of the solver, exactly as I've just presented today, has been done in this work, and so presented in the 99 FOCM conference. And then there have been improvements concerning probability analysis and the space taken by the algorithm, and also extension for computing the show form. Okay, and well, I will give more references in the third talk. So I'm going to stop here. And so the next talk is going to be tomorrow. Thank you for your attention.